We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
What American Eagle does in a year, Walmart does in a day and a half. Amazon does it in a half a day. So you don't have the scale to compete. So sustainability for me starts from financial sustainability. And so if you're able to create a level playing field for all brands to be successful, you make them financially viable and help them like grow as businesses. Then apply the concept of sustainability, like in open and sharing networks and what it does. In an open and a sharing network, you're able to scale in a decentralized way without having to invest in assets and resources.
Welcome to Retail Gets Real, where we hear from retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. I'm John Gold, stepping in as host for Bill Thorne. And on today's episode, we're talking with Shekhar Natarajan, EVP and Chief Supply Chain Officer for American Eagle Outfitters. We'll talk to Shekhar about the company's supply chain strategy, how current challenges are impacting the business, and what the future of the retail supply chain looks like. Shekhar, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you so much, John. A pleasure.
And thank you very much. You just came off a very successful session here at NR Supply Chain 360, and very much appreciate you doing that session today.
Oh, thank you. It's an honor. So I'm a great fan of Lorian and NRF and like your contribution to the retail industry. So it's a true pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you very much. So we'll go ahead and get started here. Tell us a little bit about the supply chain operation that you lead at American Outfitters, and what specifically are you responsible for?
So after the product is made, like, you know, I actually pick up the freight, move it across the ocean and the air mode of transportation, bring it into the country, the distribution operations here in the country, and the final mile delivery to the stores and to the end consumers, including customer promise, and also inventory allocation and management. So like, so my team is responsible for all of those activities. I have the good fortune of also running the two entities that we recently purchased, AirTerra and Quiet. So we're calling it Quiet Platforms.
So you've definitely been in the thick of it for the past 2 years with all the different challenges the supply chain has been facing throughout the pandemic and now that we're out. So, you know, for you, what are the top challenges that you think you're facing as of right now?
So a lot of people ask me when and how, you know, we started contemplating about the things that we've been working on. So fortunately for me, you know, having worked for Walmart and Target and like prior to that, like almost like big behemoths, like, you know, PepsiCo and Coke, you know, PepsiCo actually ships and makes actually makes 1 billion cans a day, Okay. And so the complexity of that operations and the scale at which they run it, like, you know, it was, I could see the tsunami building around us and I could see the challenges we're going to have going forward, be it labor shortage, be it like shipping capacity shortages, being like opaqueness in the supply chains, and being the fact that basically a siloed decision that companies take driving inflation. And I could see that coming. And 4.5 years ago, you know, we said the world could be a better place if it became open supply chains. Just like internet basically created the level playing field for all data and data exchange. And how many beautiful companies are built on it, like Google and Amazon and all these digital companies which got built on this open protocols, had been bothering me. Like, you know, why is supply chain not that? And the last 2 years, thanks to COVID, all my worst worries that we're going to have capacity problem, we're going to have broken supply chains, we're going to have labor shortages, we're going to have shipping trouble, all of them came to life. So we were prepared to face those challenges as American Eagle. And like, thanks really to Jay Schottenstein. He's our CEO. And to Michael Rempel, who's our Chief Operating Officer, that they saw the same things I was seeing. And they had the conviction to go after the same vision that we had. I think the world is here to be disrupted. You know, the world is like going to stay disrupted and challenged in all of these different fronts. And I think that's what is going to keep us all up at the night from a supply chain perspective. It is a whack-a-mole game. It is a whack-a-mole game. Like, you know, you put one like whack-a-mole down, like the other one pops up from the other place. So we are in this constant trouble.
Yeah, it certainly. And I think, you know, even prior to the pandemic, I mean, there have always been supply chain disruptions that we've had to deal with. Yeah. Whether it's one issue here, one issue there. But the extent of the disruption we've been seeing in the past couple of years, where everything coming to a head and just the volumes that we've been seeing helping to create that, this is something where now is a time, as you said, looking at disruption, how do we better create a supply chain going forward? So yeah, looking at making the improvements throughout from end to end, I think is critically important.
Yes.
So you talked about inflation.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, now we're seeing significant inflation having an impact on companies, on consumers, on workers. How do you see inflation and rising prices impacting your company as well as your consumers?
Well, I'm not an economist and I don't pretend to be one. But I'm a pragmatist, I feel. And the pragmatism in me tells me that the inflated supply chain costs are here to stay, right? We have raised minimum wages in almost all the states, right? And that's the best thing for working class to happen, right? And the logistics companies involved in this business, they're not going to go tell the board that let's make less money next year than this year. I don't think that's going to happen. And even if you look at, like, you know, we all say like the market is coming down, blah, 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 and all that stuff. If you go look at the numbers, yes, the volume and the number of orders have declined by 20%, but it is still inflated to 2019, right? So we are going to continue to see that upward pressure in the supply chain capacity and inflation. And I feel part of the inflation is the siloed thinking. When someone chooses to put a 53-foot container versus a 40-foot container on a vessel, and they think that they have made the right decision for their company, probably they did. But have they did the right thing for the system as a whole? They have not. By putting 53-foot containers on like a vessel, you're getting like 2,800 containers versus 3,200 containers on the vessel. So you made the capacity even more limited for the others around you. You know, so that continues to be the case. Like, you know, so me building a distribution center in the middle of nowhere, accessing the labor right next to my competition and advertising that I'll pay like a dollar more is good for me, but it's not good for both the companies because we are both paying more. Right. And it's not good for the end consumer because end of the day, somehow that actually makes it into the product cost. So it's our moral responsibility to correct it and come up with a solution for all of these things, which is really let go the control, because there's absolutely no control in supply chain. No one has control in supply chains. People think there's a mythical thinking that people control their supply chain. You don't control the factories. You don't control Maersk's and the OOCLs of the world. You don't control the FedExes. You don't control the JB Hunts of the world. Maybe you own a distribution center. Maybe like you own like a couple of shifts of labor. Even the temp agency, which actually works during the peak, is not yours. And definitely FedExes and UPSs of the world are not like yours. So where do you have control? So I think, like, as we let the guard down on this perceived notion of control and embrace open and sharing networks, I think we can flatten the world out.
And I think that plays into, you know, the investments in the supply chain vision that you've talked about, you have, that Jay has. Can you talk a little bit more about your vision and kind of how you see this open network working and how we could all partner and work together to not just reduce costs, but create more resiliency, more efficiency, and better productivity through the supply chain?
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic question. So basically, let me give you a couple of corollaries. Like, you know, people understand things when you can relate to the things that you have already seen, right? Like the best inventions are those where people have already seen that invention happen in front of your eyes, you know? DARPA was the first to come up with open standards for internet. And so what they did is basically they wanted to create a secure system of packet transfer, packets of information transferring. And they created a lot of standards for that. And so internet itself was not the greatest invention, but like the marketplaces it created like exorbitant amount of wealth. Like that's where Amazon was created. Amazon was not created if like internet never existed and everyone was running like things out of their desktop, which is not connected. Amazon would have been never created. Google would have been never created. Like all these fintech, all these marketplaces would have never existed. So just like we have the packet protocols, we don't have the package protocols. We don't have the internet of packages. And when I say packages, it's inventory. Inventory encapsulated either in a small box called a carton or the unit that shows up at your doorstep. The encapsulation is missing, right? So what we intend to build is a very similar network where the atoms now have a protocol. Atoms, like, you know, we did it for bits, we're going to do it for atoms. And that's the vision. That is our vision. Like, that is our vision to be able to create interoperable networks, right? And was it done elsewhere in the supply chain? Yes. Malcolm McLean was the guy who said, you know what? The way these guys are shipping doesn't make sense. And I'm like putting it on a truck and moving it inland in the country. And like, you know, I cannot like move those sacks and all those things. Like, you know, it's just like a pain in the rear. So he said, you know what? I'll take the encapsulation that happened on the inland and extend it all the way to the manufacturer. And hence the container industry was created. And the container industry is primarily, it solved two problems, encapsulation, and it created interoperability between the modes. But what it did not do is the interfaces. That's why we have so much trouble. Like we cannot find a container at the port. Well, you don't have the interfaces built, right? So what we are attempting to do is solve these three problems, which is encapsulation, interoperability, interfaces, through set of standard protocols. And so in that world, everything in the work step becomes a shareable asset, a shareable resource. And world is very beautiful when you share. Because you're not going to be talking about like why you have 50,000 people in that industrial park. Well, you have 50,000 people in the industrial park who can be leveraged across the network. That's what you're going to be talking about. You're going to be talking about optimizing the system as a whole, not optimizing a business as an entity.
Yeah, Malcolm McLean definitely disrupted the maritime industry with the invention of the box. And I don't think when the box was created, people would have anticipated what we're facing today and the millions of boxes we see transiting across the ocean. Yes. At any given time. So it's now we need to go to the next stage of how do we further disrupt but create more efficiency, productivity throughout the system. And I think one of the big issues that I know a lot of retailers are spending a lot of time on now is looking at sustainability throughout the supply chain as a part of their business. Mm-hmm. What should retailers be thinking about as they're looking at sustainability throughout their organization, especially on the supply chain?
That's a fantastic question. Like, listen, I'm gonna answer the question in two parts for you. I come from slums in India, where access to education, paying for funerals, paying for weddings, heck, like, you know, even electricity was a big deal. Okay? And so I believe that when you bring the thinking of scarcity, it drives through innovation. And the reason why I share that story is not because like I'm so proud of coming from slums. I'm so proud of living in United States of America. Because United States of America truly gave me an opportunity in terms of a level playing field. It didn't matter how I looked. It didn't matter who I was. It didn't matter where I came from. It just gave me an opportunity to succeed. And the businesses are not able to succeed today because you have the fight between the Davids and the Goliaths. The Goliaths have incredible scale, and the Davids are, they don't have scale. Like, I'll give you the American Eagle example. American Eagle ships 225 million units a year. A typical Walmart, like when you take their AUR and the revenues, like it's about 50 billion units a year. So what American Eagle does in a year, a Walmart does in a day and a half. Amazon does it in a half a day. So you don't have the scale to compete. So sustainability for me starts from financial sustainability. And when you're not like financially sustainable, you cannot invest in what is right from a sustainability, which is planet-based. So that is a key thing. Like, you know, all people talk about sustainability, but like I'm talking about financial sustainability and environmental sustainability, right? And so if you're able to create a level playing field for all brands to be successful, you make them financially viable and help them like grow as businesses. Just like what America did to me, right? Then like apply the concept of sustainability, like in open and sharing networks and what it does. In an open and a sharing network, you're able to scale in a decentralized way without having to invest in assets and resources. Right? So creating this distributed logistics model or decentralized logistics gets you that much closer to the end consumer. And so we are able to now take a package which is headed to John's house and combine it with other packages which are headed to John's house and get like one package to your doorstep. Of course it is cheaper. Of course it is better for the environment. Of course it is better for like people. Because the consumer doesn't have to break like 15 boxes. Yeah. Right? So I think what we are creating, I think, is a solution to sustainable logistics, both environmentally and financially. Okay? So that is one of the critical assets that what we are thinking about. Let me give you what American Eagle was able to achieve. So we said we have inventory going to the stores and the end consumers from two mega distribution centers. And we said, like, let's create a distributed logistics model, which is where the Quiet came in, right? So we moved our inventory into like six other locations across the country. By doing that, we were able to reduce the time it takes to ship to the end consumer by a day and a half. We were able to reduce the per package cost by $1.50. We were able to reduce the parcel miles by 2 billion miles. Right? And we were able to basically not carry as much inventory in the stores ahead of time. So we actually carry like 0 or 1 week of supply in the back room, which gives you immense inventory flexibility at the edge. Like, you know, if John ordered that inventory, he gets it. Or if the store needs it, they get it. But it's like a pull-based network. It's a consolidation network. So here's where this is interesting. If American Eagle was able to share its network and its resources and get that kind of benefit, think about what would happen if 1,000 brands was able to do it. And we ran the math. We'll demystify it for you. We don't need 90,000 trucks. We would be driving 49 billion miles, which is a big number. We would actually reduce the carbon emissions by 1.3 gigatons. And it is cheaper by $40 billion, right? So it's a win-win-win all for everyone. Like, you know, it's every supply chain professional's dream. Like, they always get told faster, cheaper, and better. And it's one of those typical things, like, you know, you hear a project manager, what do you want to really give up, scope, price, or the quality? Like, you know, there's never like a, you know, kind of a symbiotic relation between all of them. This is the first time that we are able to prove that all of those could be achieved because it's based on fundamental principles of sharing, openness, and distributed networks.
And this is one where obviously a lot of companies see, you know, supply chain as a competitive advantage, but this is one area where if you can see that partnership and openness to willing to work together, you can achieve these goals for companies that are extremely important from the, you know, the CEO down to the consumer.
Yes, I know that people think supply chains are a competitive advantage. And I hear that a lot. And I would only tell them that they're partially right. Supply chains are a competitive advantage only at hyperscale, not subscale. Because at subscale, you are you're reliant on a lot of relationships to work. And when there's relationship, there's opaqueness. When there's opaqueness, there's pricing discrepancies. And when there's pricing problems, like inflation comes up. And then you're beginning to do things which are good for you and not for the system as a whole. So that is where I think the opportunity lies. Creating a supply chain at hyperscale. How do you compete with the big players out there? Today it is Amazon. Tomorrow it is someone else. Whoever it is. Can we create a network where you are able to get the capabilities of a big player without having to be a big player? That is what you have to focus on.
Great. So you certainly have had quite a career journey. So why don't we talk about that a little bit? How did you get into your current role?
As I said, I came here with $34 in my pocket. I never intended to come to the United States of America. It's my brother who brought me here. He was here and it's a long story. I'll tell you someday. But I came here and I wasn't sure, even industrial engineering and supply chain is the place I wanted to be. The choice of my university was how do I stay close to my brother? He was in University of Alabama, Tuscaloosa. I was I said Georgia Tech is a good school, close by. I can hop into a Greyhound and actually go visit him. And when I graduated, I couldn't find a job. And I thought I was a complete loser. And I ended up attending some of the logistics professional series courses at Georgia Tech, having finished my industrial engineering. I think at that time, there was an aha moment in my life. I found supply chain professionals at that time to be talking in an artsy language, not a science language yet. Supply chain was nascent at that time. It was largely procurement and planning. And I said, this is pretty amazing to be in supply chain. And as I worked through all the companies that I work for, I work for Coke, PepsiCo, Walt Disney Company, Walmart, and Target, I'm super thankful, super duper thankful and grateful to God and to all the leaders that I work for. Everyone had imparted something in my life. They made me a better person. They made me a better leader. They made me appreciate how supply chains can help companies become better. And there were a lot of learnings in each of these journeys. I'll go back to the competitive advantage question that you just brought up. The biggest ingredient in Coke is water. And Coke never decided to build its own reservoirs or its water systems. It taps into that. Coke never decided to build an electric grid. It taps into it. Even a company as big as Coke, and they found that their real secret sauce is in that magic formula that they don't want to reveal. And it's in the marketing of the product, and it's the brand excitement of innovation and other things that they bring. So I think there's a lot of great learnings for big companies that you could bring in and glean into the system. And so that's what I'm really thankful for, thankful for all those experiences. And I feel this is the capstone project of my life. This is really it's everything that we are seeing the world is going through, the experiences that I've had, be it creating the sharing system for grocery delivery, or be it the new way of thinking about fulfillment, for the PepsiCos of the world, all of those. It's an amazing symbiotic learnings. And I never planned this, by the way. I never planned my journey in my life. It was just taking and seeking the opportunities that were presented to me that really got me to this point.
That's great. And I think that leads us well into our final question, which is one that we ask all of our guests that as we close out. What is your best piece of career advice for those that are just getting into the industry, or those that have been in the industry for a while?
I think the biggest piece of advice, whether you're in a company doing managing supply chain, whether you're getting into the industry as a supply chain professional, is to be open to new ideas and thoughts and be the change that you seek to see in the world, right? And so I feel everything can be learned in life. The knowledge of supply chains, the experiences that you have, you know, all of those could be achieved over a period of time. These are all like trainable tricks, right? But the only two things that comes very innate to a person and a professional is passion and their ability to make an impact. And those are fundamentally like what is going to differentiate good professionals from bad professionals. And I don't think there's like bad professionals or bad intentions, but I think like if you're able to really harness your God-gifted talent and say like, you know, how do I really create an impact? Be passionate about the change you want to create and basically be always in the lookout for like the things that are going to make a difference. I think you're going to be successful no matter what you do. No matter what you do.
Great. Shekhar, thank you very much for joining us today. Very much appreciate it.
Thank you so much, John. A true pleasure.
And thank you all for listening to another episode of Retail Gets Real. You can find more information about this episode at retailgetsreal.com. I'm John Gold. This is Retail Gets Real. Thanks for listening.